Thank you. Rudi Grimm would have loved to be at this inspiring conference, but unfortunately he couldn't come because of a family emergency. But still, he wanted you to hear about the realization of a strongly interacting mixture of lithium and potassium. It is a Fermi-Fermi mixture. And I want to thank the organizers that this is possible. There was also another topic announced, the new results on FMR physics, but I'm not entitled to speak about that. Here in Innsbruck, at the Institute of Quantum Optics and Quantum Information, we've set up this machine to cool down a mixture of lithium and potassium. Let us have a close look at the control panel. That's how it looks, at least in my dreams. So there are those common knobs you know from controlling a homonuclear mixture, homonuclear system. Temperature, that's a key knob to come down to the ultracold regime. And in our system, we've achieved a double degenerate mixture of lithium and potassium. Imbalance, that's a knob which allowed to tune from the BC-BCS crossover physics to polaron physics, or even, as we heard from Randy Hewlett, to go to this FFLO state. In our system, this means to adjust the amount of potassium in lithium. Then there's this knob on the interaction. And I can hardly think of any experiment with fermions which is not taking advantage of this knob. You can tune the crossover from BC to BCS. You can reach the strongly interacting regime. But in our system, we still have to calibrate this. But then there are also those new knobs, the mixture knobs. Those knobs are worth all the trouble you have when you really have to control two atom species. And this mass imbalance knob promises a real enrichment in many, many fields. For example, in few body physics, when it comes to FMR states, depending on the mass ratio, FMR states can be stable or not. Then in polaron physics, the effective mass or the energy shifts depend on the mass imbalance. In the crossover, it might be that the FFLO state is a much wider region in the phase diagram. Then it might also facilitate mediated interaction. There's also another bunch of knobs which concerns the species selective control. So you can think of with a bichromatic trap, you can control the trapping potentials of lithium and potassium individually. Just think of one experiment. You switch off the trapping potential for potassium, and then maybe you can manage to trap the potassium purely in the cloud of lithium, which I would call a pure atom trap. You can go further on this line and say, hey, why not creating a lattice out of potassium for my lithium? Why not a disordered lattice? Yeah. And this can be also used to match the Fermi surfaces of the two species. Then, further, this idea of this bichromatic approach can lead you to mixed dimensions. You could confine one of the two species in a lower dimension. Then first things to do along this line would be measure confinement-induced resonances, as you heard yesterday from Hans Christoph, or as it was done in Florence. So this mixed dimension promises really a rich phase diagram of novel quantum phases. Just give an example. You can think of having potassium in the layers and having lithium mediating the interaction. Maybe an interlayer superfluid might form, like we've heard of in this week for polar molecules. Yeah. So all these aspects that are opened up by having a mixture are worth, yeah, it's so cool that actually half a dozen of groups have started now to work with a lithium potassium mixture. But most of these effects require that we can actually tune to strong interaction. And this is what this talk will be about. So in this talk, we will discuss how to calibrate this knob and we want to see how far we can tune it up. I want to set the stage by listing a few aspects of interaction. Most powerfully, interaction is tuned by a Feshbach resonance, which occurs when the threshold, a molecular state, crosses threshold. So by going down along this avoided crossing, you can create molecules. This was done first in the group of Kai Diekmann, and then also in our group. So the elastic scattering is described by the well-known scattering length A. Not so well-known and not so often needed is the imaginary part of the scattering length, IB, which describes the inelastic scattering. This can happen when one of the two colliding partners is not in its ground state and can relax down. Then energy can be released and particles are lost. Another facet of interaction is the dynamics. Your gas can be collisionless or hydrodynamic. And it makes sense to define those two regimes by bringing in the trap frequency. And then if the collision time is much larger than the trap frequency, you are collisionless. If it's much smaller, it's hydrodynamic. So this hydrodynamic regime now is related to strong interaction. Strong interaction you have when the scattering length A is on the order larger as the particle spacing. And that's where the Fermi momentum comes in, because in a Fermi system, the interparticle spacing is given by the inverse Fermi momentum. So in this talk, we will go through all those four facets of interaction. But before really measuring the scattering length, I want to spend one quick slide on how to prepare the sample. And on the right side, you see the Siemens diagrams of the electronic ground state of lithium and potassium. Our convention is to label the states from the bottom to top, starting with one. So we have chosen an all-optical approach for cooling. We cool evaporatively a mixture of lithium-1 and lithium-2. During this, potassium is cooled sympathetically. It was really nice to see that this mixture is extremely stable. Then we get rid of one of the spin states of lithium and ramp to the desired Feshbach field where we want to make the experiment and prepare the desired spin state. Throughout this talk, it will be potassium in state 3 and lithium in state 1. From all those parameters, just catch that we have about 5 times more lithium and a quite cigar-shaped geometry. I said we want to measure the elastic scattering length. The idea is to look at the damping of a relative motion of lithium and potassium, because this damping is caused by collisions, which are proportional to the cross-section, which is proportional to the scattering length squared. We do this by dislocating the two clouds, let them slosh, and then, since they have an individual damping frequency, each of them, they start sloshing out of phase, and they start to have this relative motion where we are interested in the damping. So we plot the sloshing of potassium for different magnetic field values. We find different dampings. You keep on doing this for a month until you can fill up a graph like this, where we have damping versus magnetic field. And the maximum of damping we attribute to the center of the resonance. The minimum we attribute to the zero crossing of the scattering length. So from the difference, we can determine, we can extract the width of the resonance to about 900 milligauss. And it's nice to compare this to the coupled channel calculation, which they've done at NIST, Tom Hanna and Paul Julien. They found 880 milligauss. So just to note, we could increase here the damping by 2 orders of magnitude. This means increasing A by 1 order of magnitude. So we know we have a background scattering length of 60 Bohr radii, meaning here we show to tune it up to 600 Bohr radii. You can do much better, as I'll show you later. And So you might wonder, I also didn't tell you what the center here really is. Because also this we can do much better by measuring two-body loss. So as mentioned, potassium is not in the lowest energy state. So it can relax down to a lower state. In particular here, it's a spin-dipole coupling. It leads to energy release and to a loss from the trap. These losses are recorded here for different magnetic field values. And by assuming now that we really just have two-body loss, we can extract from those curves the K2 coefficient. This gives us a really narrow peaked structure here, which allows us to extract the center of the resonance with a precision of plus minus 5 milligauss. Then we can compare this to theory curves. I have to mention our atomic sample has actually more a temperature of 200 nanokelvins. So those points here lie a bit above, which you could attribute to three-body collisions now. But in general, you should see that the loss is really dominated by two-body loss. And what's also important to take home from this is that the lifetime on resonance is about tens of milliseconds. So this gives the maximum time scales for our experiments. And you see there might be a problem, because to really reach equilibrium in the trap, this might take longer. So we have to be a bit creative in measuring things. So expansion measurements or F-spectroscopy, this will do it. Now, from having seen that experiment and theory matches really nice here, you can trust the table which they came up with at NIST. This lists all the resonances with increasing energy state of potassium. From this list, you can choose now a resonance. If you want a little bit of help, I can give you a little bit of help to choose. So one important parameter of the resonance is the width. The width increases going down here in general, which is nice. Gives you easier control. Then also the SRES parameter, which is kind of a measure how good you can access the universal regime, it also increases going down here. Also good. But the gamma parameter increases as well. So in the end, it has to be a, so the gamma parameter stands for the loss. Yeah. So in the end, it will be a trade-off of width of resonance, universality, and loss. So we will stick for the K3 lithium-1 resonance for now, just to mention other resonances where this resonance used by Kai Diekmann for the creation of molecules, and this resonance here used by Gruber Waldrafen to do some further evaporation. But what's important to take home from here is, in our lithium potassium system, we just do not have this, we rule the world resonance as they have in the lithium system, and we have to live with that. So I would say homework is done. Because you can tell me now which scattering length you want, and I can tell you which magnetic field you have to go to. But what actually really our goal is to reach strong interaction. Our typical experimental parameters, this would mean we have to tune up the scattering length above 5,000 Bohr radii. This gives us a window of about plus minus 10 milligauss. We should compare this to our uncertainties. We know the magnetic field resonance position to about plus minus 5 milligauss, and the stability of the magnetic field is always around 5 milligauss. So looks tedious, but let's try. And so if we want to show now strong interaction in this mixture, it's really fruitful to look back into the past and see which signatures they found when they were looking for when strong interaction in a homonuclear quantum gas was born. So there was this experiment by John Thomas. He looked at the expansion of the gas being not superfluid. And this expansion doesn't look at all like the expansion of a normal gas. It looks much more like the expansion of a hydrodynamic system, which is driven by the pressure gradient. So it expands faster along the tight confinement. And the signature of this would be an inversion of aspect ratio. Another experiment done at Tila was measuring energies and extracting a scattering length from this. You see that this scattering length levels off here. And so we also want to look for something like this, where basically it deviates from the mean field and where there's more. Another signature we want to hunt for is it's also a hydrodynamic effect, but it's more a microscopic hydrodynamic effect. Let's call it the dragging effect for now. So if you look at this small region of this cloud when it expands, for weak interaction, the two components, they will expand quite independent with their respective velocities. But if there's strong interaction, those two species will stick together and they will expand together, which we call the dragging effect. And these three effects we want to look for now to show strong interaction. We want to look for this in an expansion measurement. So what we do is we prepare potassium 2, lithium 1 in equilibrium. Then do a rapid radio frequency transfer to the state 3, which is interacting with lithium 1. And directly afterwards, switch off the trap. So we really look at the effects of interaction in the expansion and not in the trap. The clouds expand, and we monitor the radial and axial sizes of the two clouds, of lithium and of potassium, the axial and the radial size. So the expansion of lithium can actually be well fit by the expansion of a Fermi gas. The expansion of potassium can be well fit by the expansion of a thermal gas. But when there's interaction on now, it's hard to model the expansion of lithium because part of it is in the potassium cloud, other part is expanding freely, so it's hard to model. But to model the expansion of potassium in the presence of interaction, therefore we can use a scaling law, which they came up with in Trento, for the hydrodynamic gas. And it works well. Most important is the aspect ratio. In the non-interacting case, it should go to 1, as it does. In the interacting case, you nicely see an inversion. That's what we were looking for. For now, we want to fix the time of flight to 4 milliseconds and plot this as a function of magnetic field. So again, lithium and potassium, axial and radial size. Let's interpret this now again in terms of the pressure gradient. The pressure gradient in general will lead to a fast expansion in radial direction here, and to a slow expansion in axial direction. So this kind of models well the behavior here, but here there might be more in there. And yeah, we were looking for more effects anyway. What would the dragging effect do? The dragging effect in general would lead to a speed up of potassium, going up here, and to a slowdown of lithium. Where those two effects coincide, the feature is also really pronounced, so that's all right. And here, it might explain this more complicated structure. So this effect, the dragging effect, is really a purely collisional effect, and that makes it proportional to the scattering squared. So it doesn't show a sign dependence. If there was some mean field in there, this would show a sign dependence. And isn't that a bit what we see here? And also what could explain the shift of this peak here? But I admit, to see really those three effects from only those plots is a bit, would be a hard claim. So I want to deconvolute this a bit, and let us have a closer look. A closer look at subtraction images. Therefore, we subtract from our original images the image of a non-interacting cloud, and end up with something which tells us well the redistribution of particles relative to the non-interacting case. And this we do versus magnetic field, here for lithium, here for potassium. So the bright regions now like here, they tell you there are much more particles than there are in the non-detecting case, and the dark regions tell you there are much less particles. Just to have something to compare to, this is the cloud of potassium, and this is the cloud of lithium, no subtraction. So over here, you see in general a darkening in the center. Over here, you see in general a white spot in the center. This is consistent with just a mean field interpretation. You have attraction here, and you have repulsion here. But now it's neat to see that exactly in this regime where we expect strong interaction, that's where the clouds look much more complicated. There is more in there. And we will recover the effects I was just talking about. So looking at the potassium image down here, you see potassium preferably expanding in this direction, according to the pressure gradient, and not so much in this direction. That's consistent with this macroscopic picture of hydrodynamics. The microscopic picture of hydrodynamics comes in up here. It is this dragging effect. So we really see that the lithium got stuck there where actually the potassium is. So with those images, we could kind of deconvolve the effects. And but there's still one thing I still owe you, I would say. It is a proper treatment of the interaction energy. And I guess I will still owe you a proper treatment of this after this talk, but let's try. So to let's just talk about the energies when there's no interaction energy. That's a bit trivial. You have kinetic and potential energy in the beginning. You switch off the trap, potential energy is set to zero, and you directly observe the kinetic energy. If there is interaction, this energy will be converted into kinetic energy during expansion. So from measuring the kinetic energy at the end, you can retrieve the interaction energy by just subtracting the initial kinetic energy. And to get a nice number out of this, we divide this interaction energy by the overlap integral of the two species, thereby getting the interaction parameter. And from this, we directly get an effective scattering length. Before I show you the graph, let me just remind you that we have some issues here. It is that we are not really in the far field. So this might screw up things a bit. And that the lithium cloud is actually quite complicated, as you've seen in the pictures before. But still, let's call the data preliminary. We find that the effective scattering length, which we extracted, shows this repulsive behavior and shows this attractive behavior. Let's zoom in. And let us look through the window where we expect strong interaction. Exactly there, we find this transition from the repulsive branch to the attractive branch. It is nice that those widths really match. And we also find, in general, that we have an attraction on resonance. Right here. Sorry. So we plotted the effective scattering length, but you can also think of converting this to energy per potassium particle over Fermi energy of lithium. So I just want to come to an energy scale now. Why do I want to do this? Because it's just assumption now. Let us assume a polaron picture. We just have a few potassium atoms in lithium. Then we would expect to find an energy which corresponds to this attractive polaron branch. And there's also this repulsive polaron branch up there, which is not stable. So those can decay down. And so this would be the polaron picture. And actually, we could also go now to a crossover picture in the balanced case. Yeah, there, this would be the interaction energy throughout the BC-BCS crossover. And this would be the repulsive branch where this, yeah, where they are looking for this ferromagnetic state, for example, and which we heard from Eugene Demler is unstable and can decay down. So all I want to say here, interesting stuff is going on in here. And obviously, we need to do more to tell something about this. Yeah, because in our experiment, we don't really know if we are in this crossover regime or in this Polaron regime. But we are working on this right now. We are doing RF measurements to extract directly energy shifts. And also, by RF measurements, we want to distinguish between those branches. And then we also want to go along those branches adiabatically. But that's ongoing work. All I want to tell you here is that I'm quite excited about this, and that this is made possible now by having strong interaction in the system. And I guess before I continue dreaming too much, I should conclude. And we've seen that the lithium-potassium interaction is well modeled and well under control. This we could use to find hydrodynamic expansion showing strong interaction. We started to extract energy shifts. And directly from this, one research line follows. We want to really measure more on this polaron, on this crossover energy shifts by means of RF spectroscopy. We also want to do collective oscillations to get effective mass, for example. But then, in parallel, we also started out with this research branch on species selective control. We are about to acquire nice tools like selective Bragg spectroscopy, selective mode excitation, selective trapping. And along this route, there's also this field of mixed dimensions where we can discover a lot, I think. With this, I want to thank you a lot. I want to thank the team and our collaborators at NIST. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you for this lovely talk. Are there questions?
Canonical question?
So could you go back one slide? OK, so the upper right corner, where you're looking at the where you saw the Feshbach resonance from the damping, what was the blue points?
I didn't tell you.
Right.
It's a different spin channel. So it is the channel so just of to show potassium that there was, 2 and lithium 1, just to show
just
that
to show
there
that
was
nothing happens.
This, yeah.
Okay. So that was the trivial question. Now, the lower right, mixed dimensions. So let's say that you did just what you were dreaming about in your initial remarks, that you were to confine one of the species to a lower dimension and not the other. What would a confinement-induced resonance mean when one thing is confined and the other one isn't? Because, of course, the way we've been taught to think of it by Olshani is that we confine both collision partners, and their collisions now are altered by the fact that it's confined. So what happens if only one of them is confined? How should you think about that?
So you could ask this question, actually, the guys in Florence, because they measured this. So they have a rubidium-potassium system and really confined just one of the two species and claim to have measured those confinement resonances.
Yeah, so it's a resonance between particle confined in lower dimension and particle in 3D.
So that also I can understand it. Because first it would be interesting.
So it's just a resonance between. So it's just a formation of the energy band state between confined atom and unconfined atom. So it's.
Well, maybe that's enough for a theorist to understand, but not for me.
I really think of it like this, that the lithium atom can be indeed confined with the potassium atom. So it can really build a molecule with the potassium atom. Yeah? And then this state crosses, which gives you this resonance. So my picture is not so different of the.
So you're saying confining one of them effectively confines the other because of the interaction?
If it wants to form a molecule, I would say so, yeah. Is that?
Is that?
who?
I mean, it's always very nice to see the very exciting new progress, to see a new system. So my question is actually not offensive, but you may feel like that. So I just try to figure out, you know, we already have a, say, Nissan mixture, like a same species with two spins. So I was wondering, you know, from a many-body physics point of view, what kind of a new physics you want to explore?
What do you mean we already have?
For example, like a Nissan 6 with two spins. So what?
Okay,
Here you have a Nissan mixed with potassium, right? So what if I just have a two-component fermion gas with the same mass, say just two high-fine spin states with Nissan 6? So you can already study many wonderful physics over there, and people already have that. So the question is, I'm pretty sure there's something new, but from many body physics point of view, what kind of new phases and a new physics you would think this would be unique?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you think in terms of Polaron or so, okay, the effective mass is a bit different, energy shift is a bit different, but what does it really change, yeah? Maybe I just answer this from an experimental point of view. I mean, look at this stuff. We can do species selective control. So this is new, yeah? Because having different traps for lithium-1, lithium-2, that's not possible. Doing something like this, mixed dimension, it's not possible. And that's where the new phases come in. That's where, for example, this interlayer superfluid or so is predicted.
Yeah, thank you, Sandy. You showed us the picture of interaction energies, where it was going through this exactly. So this graph, in particular the lower one, I think it resembles the graph in the experimental work of Christoph Salomon with lithium. Long time
ago. Oh, yes, it does.
And do you have the same explanation of the behavior?
Okay, let me point out one important difference. The measurement by Christoph Salomon was done by an adiabatic ramp. So you really go to the ground state. Mm-hmm. What means ground state? Okay, going along up here, this was the excited state, and they saw this decay before the resonance. That's what they saw.
Yeah.
Here, we do a jump to this system. We really do a 50 microseconds radio frequency pulse to get to this system. So we are not going there adiabatically. And so it's kind of a question, because our 50 microsecond pulse, it is much wider than the separation of those two branches. So you could think of populating both. And that's what you see in the end in the energy measurement. And so that's why we want to do now radio frequency spectroscopy much more precise with a longer pulse where we can distinguish those two branches. But in general, it is really simple, and we try to learn from this experiment of Christoph Salomon.
Yes. And then I have a related question. The Feshbach resonance that you are investigating, do you consider it as a narrow resonance or wide resonance? Or
all narrow.
Narrow. Okay, which means...
So for, just to give you a number, maybe you can work with this number. So on this resonance I was just talking about, the effective range goes up to 3,000 Bohr radii, which is not at all negligible on resonance.
Yeah, so...
It might limit the universality, yeah?
Yes, I think so. But you have to compare K Fermi, the Fermi momentum, multiply this range with unity.
Sorry?
Something. You have to compare the product, Fermi momentum multiplied this guy with unity, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, and then you judge whether the resonance is wide or narrow or whatever, or intermediate. In your case, it's likely to be close to intermediate.
Yeah, I mean, we can tweak the Fermi momentum a bit by going to stronger confinement. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So I just have a brief comment actually on the potential opportunities from many body point of view. I'm pretty sure some of the other theorists probably also thought about this. When you have a mixture of fermion with tunable mass ratio, we know that the few body physics is very different from lithium-lithium system. So it's completely open question, you know, those very interesting few body physics, whether they will induce new many body correlations. The lithium physics, from many body point of view, the correlation is mainly in the dimer channel, two body channel, right? That's sort of a pairing phenomenon. But in other mixtures, you will have much more complex building blocks there. You might have, you know, sort of dominating correlation in trimer channel or in the possibly also in those four body channel. So if that's the case, it can completely, we basically are talking about completely different class of the many body states. I find it's very exciting. It's certainly we don't know how to deal with these correlations at the moment. Right? So it's from theory point of view, it's a completely new platform, I would say. I mean, so I look forward to, you know, more interesting results from the mixture physics.
Thanks for answering the first question.
Okay. The organizers suggest that we get together at 4:10. The schedule says 4:20, but we think it might as well just start again at 4:10. So thank you very much, and thank you.